Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Lisa McNeely, your host for Spotlight on Recruiting. I'm really excited. Our dedicated dude today is the amazing recruiter, leader, and my friend, Patrick Sherry. Patrick and I will be discussing how organizations are strategically redeploying employees, strengths and talents to needed areas of the business. So before we dive right in, I just want to take a minute to introduce Patrick. Patrick is a global talent acquisition director. He's responsible for leading recruitment teams across the U.S. and Europe. He has over 20 years of recruitment experience in finance, healthcare, and technology industries. I have had the distinct pleasure of working with Patrick at American Express and then also partnering on recruiting initiatives with other large financial firms. Patrick is a U.S. Air Force veteran. So first off, Patrick, thank you for your service. And then second, thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Absolutely. More than happy to.
So just to get us a little bit started, you know, Patrick was located in New York City, and I had just kind of reached out just on a personal level just to check in and see how, you know, he and was doing, I guess, both personally and professionally. And then in that conversation, we got to talking about layoffs and furloughs, and Patrick had some great insights on redeployment based on the needs of the business. So just to start off, Patrick, for those who may not be familiar with redeployment, can you just briefly explain what that is?
Sure. It's, in essence, it's really expanding your current job function. So you're expanding it into maybe a project or a new opportunity internally, and it could be short-term, long-term. It could be 60, 90-day projects, or it could be a long-term FTE role within another division.
Yeah, perfect. And I think that, you know, one of the things that is so great about, you know, a redeployment type initiative is, you know, it's a way to minimize the negative impacts that either a reduction in force, a layoff, or, you know, furloughs, any type of restructuring project, it can help just mitigate some of the negative impact.
Absolutely.
So tell me, you know, I guess as far as the benefits of redeployment, I mean, we've talked about, you know, it's a way to minimize, and but, you know, what is the, I guess, the benefits of redeployment to an organization?
Well, it's a couple different things, but one of them is you always want to retain your top talent, right? So if you have some wonderful talent and they've been adding value time and time again, you know, how do we keep them? You know, is it a project? If it's a project, then they're wonderful. Then it adds value immediately. It allows the project to get immediate attention. And it can also, if it's long-term, it can help close a gap, a resource gap that's been, maybe it's been needed for quite some time and they just couldn't get the FTE funding to do it. So again, short term, it fills an immediate need. Long term, it can help close a resource gap. And then I think the other piece of it too, as far as what benefit would be, is having the employee, the gain to them as far as gaining knowledge or insight into a different business or function that they normally wouldn't have experienced. So it's adding tools to their toolbox as well.
No, that's great. And I think it's, you know, one way is that they already know the company as well, because I know that some of the organizations I'm speaking with, if they are currently hiring, they're onboarding because they've never had to do it, any type of virtual onboarding. They're struggling of how do we onboard these new employees and get them to know the business and, you know, the players in the business. And, you know, with redeploying your current employees, you don't have that struggle.
Right, right. They already understand how the organization makes money. They understand the codependencies between the different lines of business. And on top of it, they're a known commodity. Everyone knows their performance level and what they can bring to the table.
Yeah, that's good. So I guess if a business was considering, layoffs or furloughing employees, what do you think they should consider in respect to employee redeployment?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to your budget, right? If you've been asked to mandate that you reduce your budget by 10% and you're already running lean, then you may have to consider layoffs or redeployment. And when we're looking at redeployment, you also look at the employee's strengths and skill sets, and you can also look at it as far as what other opportunities are available within an organization. I could think of an example that happened, I think it was last week. I was talking to a hiring leader. She's on the operating committee of our organization, and she was talking about creating a diversity function within her own group. And I also know that we're looking at our budget heavily right now as far as, where can we make some concessions? And, of course, people resources is your greatest expense. So I suggested an individual that I work with, who's a peer of mine, who's had tremendous energy around the diversity space, and those conversations, they're being facilitated as we speak here today. And the win would be that this individual who's currently sitting within the people function may slide over into a diversity role, something that he has a lot of excitement around. It'll reduce our costs as well as a function. So it's a multi-win.
No, that's fantastic. And it kind of even actually just leads me to that my next question is, in this case, it's something that, this employee, had great passion around, but, how do you go about pitching these new roles or assignments to employees within the organization?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess a couple different things. One, as a leader, I've already sat down with my directs in the beginning of the year, and I know where their development plan or what their development plan looks like. I know what they want to accomplish short term, 90 to 180 days. I know what they want to do 90 to through mid-year to the end of the year as far as where they want their career to go and the different skill sets that they want to obtain. So it's often working with those. I know with the company I work with, we develop 25 different projects within the people function that there was always a need, but we never really had the resources. And because some things have slowed down, now we're able to dedicate resources to those particular projects. I went to my team individually and said, these are our projects, which ones you have the most interest in. I let them pick, but the ones where I know they can also add the greatest value to, I kind of steered them to that as well, just because they had the institutional knowledge to make an immediate impact to that particular project.
Yeah, that's so I guess, how, because it's great if you have people who, they want to be the hand raiser, they're willing to kind of take on a new challenge. How do you, make sure that the employee isn't penalized, or experience a negative consequence if things don't work out? Because, sometimes, unfortunately, they're willing to try it, but unfortunately fail. So, what do you do in those situations?
Well, that's actually a really good question. You want people to develop in the direction that they're leaning towards, but you also have to make sure it's realistic as well. So the individuals that roll up to me, the projects they signed up for, I think some of the coaching I gave them is just do the absolute very best you can. And if it's not the right project for you for whatever reasons, raise your right hand, let me know, and we can always redeploy you or we put you into a different type of project. The other thing, too, when you're about raising hands, some people take on too much. I can think of one individual, she signed up for so many projects, there's no way she's going to be able to add value to it. She's going to have to skate from one to the next. She's not going to be able to get deep. So that was a little bit of coaching as far as in which ones do you have the most energy, which ones you have the most passion around, and let's try and align you accordingly. And then I don't think if it's a long, if it's short term, I don't think there's going to be no one's really going to be penalized for being a part of the team and trying to move it forward. I think maybe negative, the only negative consequence I could see is if it's a long term, they switched. They're no longer, if they were part of the talent acquisition team and they decided to go into the business in a sales role and that type of redeployment, and it turns out sales isn't necessarily their strong suit, then I don't know if it's got a negative consequence, but then we may have to try and redeploy them again into another opportunity. They may be an amazing employee, but maybe what they selected just wasn't the best fit for them long term.
No, that's good. So, and I think, you know, what I'm hearing is like, you know, they, you know, employees are given the option, you know, to accept either a new role or project or exit that if it's not working out. And it sounds like, you know, one of the good things, you know, is to become like a sponsor, you know, reassure them that you're there to support them, whether you're their current manager or I guess going to be their new manager. When you're redeploying now, are you providing some sort of training to these employees?
Yeah, the gaining leader does. So if they're going to be part of a project team and there's a gap that needs to be closed, then the gaining leader would actually take that initiative on and help close that gap.
And what about, I guess, do you employ, if an employee, say it's a temporary assignment, you know, for the example of the, you know, diversity initiative, when things start to kind of get back to normal, do you allow that employee to stay or do you bring them back to the team?
There's always variables involved with that, but if it's a fit and that employee wants to stay in that space and the leader has enough work to keep them busy, then let them stay in that space and be productive. I think of someone on my team about a year ago, he asked to actually step down from his role and be a part of about four or five different large initiatives within the people function. As part of his development plan, I made some internal movements to allow that to happen, and he did. He's been gone for almost a year, and jokingly, I asked him if he's ever going to come back, and I don't know if he is, to be honest with you. I love to have him as a resource. He's an amazing, amazing worker, but on the same token, if he wants to continue his career in that manner, then I have to support it.
No, good. So I guess how do you communicate these projects or temporary assignments or, you know, internal roles that are available? How do you communicate these to, you know, the various staff?
I think there's a few different vehicles. One, we have an internal job board, so our intranet, where everything gets posted, not just long-term FTE opportunities, but also projects that we're working on. If an employee is impacted and their role is going to be, they're going to be made redundant for whatever reasons, then we definitely want to look at retaining that employee. You know, how do we redeploy them into different parts of the organization? In our particular company, we have an agile team, and it's a rather large team, and at any given time, they're working on 30, 40 different projects, and it's very easy to get someone into the agile team to be adding, you know, even on a temporary basis to increase their skill sets. And then we also have an in-house service similar to an outplacement agencies or agency where we help individuals write their resumes. You know, so many people, they have one generic resume, one size fits all, and they use it to apply for every single job that they've ever applied for. And, you know, we teach them how to tailor to the qualifications of the job, how to interview. A lot of people, you know, interviewing is a skill. Some people haven't interviewed for a job in many, many years, and they're rusty. They're not comfortable sharing their successes for whatever reasons it may be. So it's helping them with the interview skills as well. And then we try and promote internal mobility whenever we can on an ongoing basis. We have a lot of employees that go from one function to another team, to another business, you know, to enhance their skill sets or to grow their career, or they just simply have always had an interest in it. We open up a new function, career coaching, within the people function, and we had more applications and more hands raised to do that. We never in our wildest thoughts even conjured up the idea that we would have 100 applicants for something like that internal, but we did. So there's a lot of different opportunities, but we try and make them available to everyone in a centralized place, because what we don't want happen is for somebody to miss out on an opportunity just because they didn't hear about it. So that's where we really rely on the internet and cascading it down from our senior leaders down to the employee base.
I think that's good. And I think that's, you know, what great best practice, because I know just with organizations that I've worked for in the past, similar is, you know, any employees that, you know, were being impacted by whether it's a layoff or a furlough, is having some type of career coaching, as you had kind of said, you know, like an internal outplacement service. For listeners that are listening, they may not know what an outplacement service is. Can you kind of explain that, Pat?
Sure. An outplacement service is a service. There's a handful of really big ones out there that companies will contract with. So when they do have a reduction in force, they help provide services to them. They help help them write their resumes. Some of the same things that we do in-house. They help them write their resumes. They teach them interviewing skills, how to find a job on an external market. They teach them that, you know, looking for a job is a job in itself. You know, spending an hour a day looking for opportunities, you're probably not going to get too far. How to network yourself. These are all things that an outplacement service will do. And this is some of the services that we try and bring in-house to give our internal employees that same level of knowledge.
Yeah, and I would think that it's, you know, the ideal goal is that you can, you know, keep them within the organization. But if not, at least they, you know, they're successful in finding new employment, whether it be internal or outside the organization.
Yeah, exactly.
Good, good. So I guess, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm thinking is, you know, there is some other availability, I guess, for some organizations. I had heard of, and I don't know if you'd heard of this, but People Work Connect, which is a platform that was actually built by Accenture. I think they've teamed with SHRM, but I know that the platform was built by Accenture. And this may be good for any of the larger organizations out there. And what they're doing is they're saying, hey, if you're an organization and you have, you know, let's say 100 jobs to fill, I think that's kind of the minimum number they're looking for. You have 100 jobs to fill, and there's another organization out there that says, you know, I have 100 workers available. You can go to this platform, just People Work Connect, and it's almost like a mass trade with one other company. Kind of the same thing. I mean, it's basically redeployment. It could be, you know, a temporary type position. It could be, you know, a type of project, but it's just a way for business to business to connect, to make kind of that mass trade. I think that a lot of organizations right now, they're trying to work together because, you know, they want people to be successful and they want to take care of their employees. And I don't know if that's something that you had heard of or not.
I've heard of it. We haven't applied that to our organization, but I have heard of it. And I think in this time, with everything that's happening external with COVID-19, I think anything we can do to keep people employed and happy is something that we should always look at.
Oh, good, good. So, you know, with, I guess, one of the things, you know, as we're talking about redeployment and things, I guess, you know, most of your employees, they're working virtually at this time. You know, as the quarantine begins to be lifted, you know, what are your thoughts on bringing employees back to the office and maintaining social distancing? Is that something that you guys are currently, you're working on?
Yeah, we've had a lot of meetings about this. Right now, 99.8% of our organization was working from home. And that's changed a little bit. We've opened our offices up in China, and we've also opened them up in Singapore. And we're using those locations as a template as other countries begin to ease restrictions and allow people to return back to the workplace. So what we're doing is whatever date the local government shares is an effective date. If they say, for example, June 1st is a date where you can start bringing people back to work, we delay it a couple weeks, and what we do is we're bring, or what we will do and continue to do is bring people back in waves. The first, maybe the, within the first 2 weeks, we'll bring 20% of the employee base back into the office. And of that 20%, they'll be deemed critical. Maybe they're individuals who are building computers for our new employees. Maybe they're working on some other technology functions that have to be done on site. Those people will come in first. And then about 2 weeks after that, we'll have a second wave. And that'll be probably 30 to 40% of our employee population. But those are ones that can work without the need of another team member that sits next to them. They can work by themselves. And again, more in a critical position than not. And as we define critical, the people function, although critical to a company's success, doesn't have to be on site. So the people will probably be one of the last groups to be entered into the to the company. But what we're also looking at, too, is do they need to come back? We have a lot of employees that are performing at a very high level right now, and they don't have an interest in coming back to the office. They're set up at home. It's working wonderfully for them. So why not consider that as a consider that person as a remote employee moving forward? It'll reduce real estate costs. You know, it's just one huge savings in itself, especially when you think of high cost locations like New York and London. The other piece of it too is when we bring them back, we also have to look at our workspace. In previous, we've always been on top of each other. You're trying to maximize your space with the most amount of people, and that's not the best. Probably not the best remedy right now. So we have to reconfigure our workspace. We're going to have to keep people distance apart. We're looking at, you know, moving our offices that are open or cubes 6 feet apart. We also have to recognize that, that a lot of people will feel uncomfortable if not everyone's wearing a mask. So do we implement masks? I think the answer to that is going to be yes, at least in the short term, after we bring the office, we bring people back into the office. But we also have to be cognizant of who else is sharing that building. Our building in New York is a 55-story building, but we only occupy, I think, 11 or 12 of those stories, those floors. So how do we interact with the other people on the floors? And do they have the same level of energy as far as keeping their employees safe? You know, how do you share an elevator? How do you share a cafeteria? So those are some of the things that we're still trying to solve for. I know it'll. I can assure you it'll be methodical, and we're not going to force anyone to come back to work that doesn't want to come to work. I was on a meeting earlier this morning, and we were, as a leadership team, they were talking about we should just put a stake in the ground and saying if you don't want to come back until the end of the year, then don't come back. You know, we'll see you in 2021 for those individuals. But we also have to be aware that we do have employees that working from home long-term isn't a good thing. You know, they have multiple distractions at home, whether it's family members or who knows what, you know, whatever is going on in their lives. And we have to be cognizant of that too. So I think somebody had shared earlier, for every person that doesn't want to come back to the office, or somebody that's desperately saying, please let me come back to the office so I can have more social interaction and I can be more productive in my role. But we'll deal with those one-on-one and whatever makes the most sense for that individual.
No, I think those are great best practices. And I think for some of the listeners that are, you know, listening, that's good to hear, you know, just some of the strategies, you know, that other organizations are doing. And you're right. I mean, I think there's a lot of factors to consider, you know, whether it's, you know, they themselves are, you know, at risk, or they live with someone who's at risk, and then you have, you know, daycare issues, and you have, you know, people who maybe, especially in New York City, they have exposure just, you know, riding the subway into work, and so giving them the opportunity of you can or don't have to, I think that's really great. So it sounds like, I mean, you know, it's a great organization, and you're doing, you know, good things to make sure you're taking care of your employees.
Yeah, but you also have to look at the public transportation, too. If you think of New York City, the majority of people take public transportation, whether it's a subway or a bus, to get to work. And how comfortable does the employee feel getting on a subway packed with people shoulder to shoulder? You know, and then the other piece of it, too, is you know, the living spaces in New York City is significantly smaller. It's not suburbia where you have a, you know, you may have a house with multiple bedrooms and everyone's hunkered down in a bedroom. In a city, in an apartment, you may have four or five people living in an apartment, and it's two bedroom if you're lucky, maybe a three bedroom. So how do you, you know, how do you work in that environment? And that's, these are things that we, again, we have to continue to try and solve for.
Good, good. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but I do have one question for you that I know that other recruiters, questions that I'm getting, and it doesn't have to do with redeployment, but it is about applicants that they have, that they're trying to keep them engaged because they, although the position right now is in a hiring freeze, they do anticipate that they'll be able to hire them in the future, and they've kind of delayed, not given them a start date, but to keep them kind of warm, you know, can you give some, you know, how are you keeping your applicants engaged?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what we did do, not what I think, but what we did do, any offers that we had extended, we honored them. And we honored them with the understanding and as well as communicating to the new hire that you will be starting virtually. You know, we'll send you a computer, we'll get you all set up at home, but you will be starting virtually. For those candidates or for those applicants that we're still going through the recruiting process, the requisition is still opening. What we are seeing is people are more skittish to actually leave their known company for an unknown what's going on with the new company they may be joining. In this case, the company I work for, I know personally some of the coaching I've given some candidates is that this is a critical role. If it wasn't critical, there, you know, we wouldn't have the funding for it right now. And I talk about the company's success. You know, luckily I work for a very successful company, and I've been able to show, you know, growth year over year for the last 5+ years. I guide them to our current stock price right now, which really hasn't dipped at all. It's staying high. So it's getting having a candidate feel comfortable with the recruiting process that they're still engaged. If the role is frozen, which, you know, we see some of that, it's been paused. Then it's just having outreaches with the candidate, letting them know, hey, you know, you're still our number one, or you're still a viable candidate for this role. We'd love the opportunity when things open up to bring you back and put you back through the interview process. But it's really important that follow-up continues, because out of sight, out of mind. If you're an organization and you're recruiting someone and you don't talk to them for a month or two, you know, sometimes a little bit harder to re-engage, because now you're recreating that level, that relationship again. You're recreating a level of trust where if you just took 10 minutes once a week to have a quick conversation, or even 5 minutes, then that relationship goes a long way.
Oh, great. That's good. And I think, you know, it's really no different to how you typically recruit. It's just kind of the message that you need to make sure that you're portraying a message of, you know, here's our company's strength, and making sure that you're continuing that relationship. So that's great.
Absolutely.
Well, we're almost out of time. So, Patrick, just thank you for being our dedicated dude today and sharing your insights. This information, I think, has, you know, been really valuable to me, and I think valuable to, you know, our listeners that we have. So I want to, you know, do a special thanks to all of the listeners that are both in the U.S. and international. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio Show Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific. The next Spotlight on Recruiting episode will be Monday, July 20th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.